I'll follow your lead.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hot Topics from the Soul with your host, Dr. Valerie N. Parker, businesswoman, author, speaker, and life coach. Dr. Parker is the president of Arise by VMP, which is a speakers bureau and public relations company. She is also the visionary and founder of the Soul of a Woman Foundation that brings awareness to domestic violence and children living in single-parent homes. Hot Topics from the Soul is a virtual lifeline to the community, discussing social and political issues, relationships, finances, motivation, and inspiration. For information regarding products, services, and resources, visit www.fromthesoulofawoman.com. That's www.fromthesoulofawoman.com. Ladies and gentlemen, I now present to you your host, Dr. Valerie Parker.
Good evening and welcome to Hot Topics from the Soul. I'm delighted to be here once again with you on this Tuesday evening. Shirley Card is my co-host and she is traveling tonight, but I have with me a special guest, certainly no stranger, my dear friend, J.R. Sicklin. Are you there?
I am here, Dr. Val, and it's so great to be with you on tonight.
I am so excited every time I get the opportunity to share the radio platform, and we've shared the stage several times before, but you have your own radio show.
Well, I do, Val, and you know what? A lot of that is from your inspiration, to be quite honest with you, because of the fact of what I saw you do with Hot Topics from the Soul. Once again, that adventurous spirit inside of you, that visionary inside of you that believe that the world is your classroom. And, you know, and that inspired me. And although my show kind of fell in my lap, but it was because of the inspiration of what you have done and what you have done so successfully that, you know, that motivated me. And I could say after 2 years now that the show is going pretty well.
Well, isn't it amazing how time just flies?
Time is flying right before our very eyes, and that's part of the problem. We don't take time to know that time is passing us by.
Yeah, you know, 2015 is in a couple of weeks, and, you know, as we get closer in towards Christmas, we'd be like, yeah, I'm going to finish the year strong. I'm almost there. I'm going to get this done. I'm going to get that done. But the reality is that it's just a transition from one month to the next. And a lot of times people are still very lackadaisical and complacent, not doing what they said, oh, I'll do it next week. I'll do it next week. And then next week turns into a whole nother year that's passed by.
You know, and that's what happens, and that's the danger of procrastination. And you said it best, you know, in the natural human mind, we look for these starting points. We look for these places of demarcation. You know, we wait for the first of the month or the first of the year or beginning a new week, and we can find a way to justify all of that. But you know what the reality is that time is passing on, and we have to prepare for where we're going, because if we don't, we're going to end up with the same results that we currently have and that we've always had. And so, you know, we have to prepare in every facet of our lives, not just one. I mean, we have so many things that we literally have to be preparing for, because if not, we're going to, you know, the only thing would have changed is the calendar. And it's dangerous. What's dangerous if only the calendar changed? And I often say this every year. If only the calendar changed on December 31st, 2014, and when that clock strikes 12 midnight, when it should be January 1st, 2015, if there has not been some change of heart, change of mind, some implementation of some new things and thoughts, we might as well be into December 32nd, 2014, December 33rd, 2014, because we have not turned over a new year because we still have the old mind.
Yeah, now see, that's where the transition doesn't happen. It doesn't happen in the mind. People, you know, say the mind is a terrible thing to waste. A lot of times we sit here thinking and not acting on those thoughts that because it has been said that our lives are what our thoughts create. So if we're not creating anything because we're not thinking about anything, then we won't shift and move into another level.
And you're exactly right, because the fact, not only is the mind a terrible thing to waste, the fact of the matter that the mind has so many thoughts that cross it, that goes through every day, but we don't capture those thoughts, we don't materialize those things. It is people that are successful that begin to capture those thoughts, and then they begin to commit a plan to it. You know, we're talking about planning goals, and when we're talking about plan, you know, and goals is a plan without a deadline. You know, goals are a plan without deadline, or should I say dreams without deadline. So we have to act upon those things that are going through our mind. How do I gravitate? How do I make some changes? How do I make some very efficient and sufficient steps moving forward? Because other than that, we can have a conversation with ourselves all day long. But if that thought does not come to the place that we now formulate an action, we're just fooling ourselves. And that is why, in order to make that transition, we have to begin to not only think it out, we have to sometimes write it out, we have to talk it out, and then walk it out.
You know, so much has happened in the last few weeks. You know, we had the elections back in November, and then this ordeal with the Ferguson case, the explosiveness of the police officer not being charged now. Those that are new to hearing you on the show, J.R. Ficklin is an advocate for domestic violence and has been for numerous amount of years. As a matter of fact, I was a victim of domestic violence and he didn't even know it, because we go back over 20 years.
Absolutely. So, you know, Val, I often think about that when you say that, you know, that way back then, and we have, I mean, we go back about 23, 24 years now, and even way back then, I wasn't even aware that you were. And one of the reasons I wasn't is because, in fact, I think it's something I've heard you say, I know that you did it with an interview that you said, you know, you could want an Academy Award because, in fact, you learned to act out a certain role, and it was so good that not even I noticed it, and I missed it. And not only did I miss it, a whole lot of other folks missed it. But the great thing about it, as we talk about transition, is, Val, that you got it. And when you got it and you put a name on it, you begin to make a transition. You begin to do some things that empowered. And as a result, you are an example today for so many that when we talk about, I mean, one of your more famous, and I call it famous because I always talk about it when I travel, I talk about your whole series that you did on From Pain to Power. Mm. You made that happen as a result of looking at your life, looking at where you were and where you needed to go, and you looked at the things that was valuable in your life. Your children at the time, they were valuable in your life. You know, your dreams, you had to recover dreams, and they were valuable. And that's kind of what we have to do as we are transitioning out of this year, going into next year. What type of hope do we have? You know, what type of aspiration that do we have? Are we just going to be happy with going into 2015 and basically it's just December 32nd, 33rd, and 4th, and 5th, and so on? Or are we going to begin to prepare ourselves, the things that we need to do to make it a more effective year? And, you know, and that's really where it's all about, Val. I have made a personal declaration within myself. There are things that I have to do different, starting with health. Start with wellness, starting with finances, starting with all of those things, because that is the only way that I'm going to see a different result than what I've seen.
Wow, you know, and you mentioned health. I'm going to have some of my doctor friends on, Dr. Marcia Harris, Dr. Clarence Granich, who are strong supporters of my foundation, the Soul of a Woman Foundation. And we're going to have to do a health segment because, you know, it's holiday time and what do you call, it's crunch time. So as we're closing 2014, there are a lot of things that's undone, and we find ourselves running and scrambling. And in that running and scrambling, we forget to eat. We don't eat properly. I did it today. I went through the whole day basically and didn't eat anything until just before the show. And we can't keep that going and then make a transition into the new year with ailments and situations because that we actually sabotage our own health.
You know, Val, you know, I can be the amen corner on that one, because one of the things that happened, I think we have to be so cautious, is because of the fact in the midst of what we call festivities, celebrations, you know, great times, you know, holiday meals and things, oftentimes we fall off the wagon and we overextend ourselves and we're eating too much of the things that we're eating. It's not a matter that it's good. It's that so many times we're eating too much of it. We're eating excessively. And as a result, you'll find yourself in my position where I had to end up dealing with a blood sugar that was 428. That is unheard of. That's blinding. Sure. I mean, people go blind because of that. But I tell you, it became a wake-up call for me. When I took that blood sugar and saw that, it scared me. I literally became scared. I immediately said, God, what do I need to do? I was out of my medication. What can I do? And so I just started exercising, started jogging in the house, running around. It was at night when I took it, and I ran around hoping to bring it down. And then I went and grabbed cinnamon powder. But you know what it said to me? It said to me in this wake-up call that, listen, you cannot continue in the way that you are. You have but one body. That's all you get. You don't get a chance to get to trade it in. You don't get a chance to get upgrade it to another model. No, you only have one body. And so I've said to myself every day, the very next morning, I got back to my regimen. I walked 3 miles. Again, 3 miles a day. You know, getting back to the regimen, eating right. Now, my problem was I got so scared because it wasn't coming down. My next reading was 323, and it kept, and then, you know, went down to 270-something, then up to 297, and I'm like, so something is wrong here, and the lowest that it has gotten is 172, so I'm still in the midst of it, but here's the thing I'm sure of, is that I made a decision, and that I began to walk it out. And so I'm walking it out. I'm eating. I'm not eating the things I shouldn't. Nothing white. I'm sorry to say that.
Yeah, all white stuff is bad.
Yeah. Isn't that funny? We never hear that in society, right? We've been told everything dark is bad. But no, you know, if it's white, it's not right when it comes to your health.
Right.
And even because of what it does. But we have to make
levels,
those conscious
decisions. White ain't right.
Well, that kind of almost leads us to a whole other subject there about white not being right, because, in fact, when white continues to bring damage and harm to those around it, then guess what? That says that white is not only right, but white is trifling. White can be very dangerous, and white can be very disenfranchising, and that's both in the natural as well as our physical body.
Absolutely, and that brings us back to that Ferguson ordeal. Shirley and I talked about it on the show last week, you know, about the, you know, not guilty. You know, how could that be possible? And what do you think, being that you're out there on the forefront for domestic violence and an advocate of change, and you work with Angela Williams with Mothers Against Murders, you know, what is that saying, and what are some of the things that we need to implement so that we can be heard?
Well, one of the things we have to do, and I believe this with all my heart, is that we have to start from the inside out. I mean, definitely we need to take a definitive stand and let the system know, law enforcement know, the government know that we matter, that we count, and that we have value, and that we're not going to just continuously listen to the narrative of telling us that don't believe what we see, don't believe what we hear, but believe what they tell us. And we know better than that. And what have happened is that we've stereotyped. If they have so put in place a stereotype of what young black men and what black men are, and that they've labeled that with thug and dangerous and all those things, so that literally the stereotype of any young black man is almost one that is one that to be feared, and so I feel threatened. And that's a lie. We've got to understand this, is that we are valuable, and we have to get them to know that we're valuable, and it starts with us, because I believe this, that we teach people how to treat us. We teach people how to encounter us, and we have to begin that from the inside out. So what do I mean by that? I believe that when we start valuing one another across the line, when young black men look at other young black men and really respect one another, understand, listen, man, you may be from the west side or the east side, but we are, you know, but we're good. We're good. When we start valuing ourselves, when young black men and young black boys stop calling females bees and hoes and all those things and stop degrading them, then it shows a sense of value that we have for ourselves and for them. And I think that's what the problem is. The wrong narrative is out there, and that narrative is that we don't give a blank about each other, look at the crime that we commit against each other. And I think that is something for us to look at, because the fact we've got to stop it. And when we stop it amongst ourselves, we also let them know that we are valuable, and you're not going to treat us like we're, you know, like we're some empty sack of potato. You know, we've got to begin to do that, and we've got to stand up, but we've got to stand up even louder and let them know that we're not going to sit around and let you kill up all of our black boys and kill up all of our black young men and stuff, and then nothing is done, and you don't want to indict an officer, and he just goes on as if nothing happened. We have to stand, and I think one of the things, Dr. Val, is this. What I think is going to make this particular response different than previous one is because of the fact we are seeing young people stand up. We're seeing kids in high school and colleges begin to walk out and stage walkouts and sit-ins. That is the voice that was present even in the civil rights movement. Folks understand the sit-in,
right,
and all those things was by young people. And so when young people begin to understand their value and begin to stand up and speak up, it sends a profound message. And that's what we have to do, continue to send that message. You know, you have boys and girls, but your young black men that you have raised, and they are young men that have pride. They have pride in themselves. They have pride in making a difference. And those are the images that society don't want to show. They don't want to show those young men. They don't want to show your sons, but they want to show these that they have painted this label that they're thugs. They don't care about life. And so it starts with us. And if we start valuing ourselves and start raising that value, the visibility of that which is good, I think we can begin to see a difference.
Wow, you know, one thing you said was so profound is that when these young, when Dr. King and Sojourner Truth and all those forerunners, they were all young.
Absolutely.
I just realized that you're absolutely right. They were young. They started fighting in their 20s. So that tells you the mindset of the youth back then versus the youth now. It has taken such a downward drop and fall, and wow, that is kind of scary. So that means that because of the generation, I believe, where the babies are having babies, you know, people on welfare and just continually having babies and not educating their children to take pride in who they are and whose they are, this is what we produce. We produce these lesbians and homosexuals and drug dealers and alcoholics, these crack users, because of the environment that they adapted instead of rising up against, you know, the situation, their environment, they're succumbing to it and perpetrating and recycling it, if you will, keep birthing the same thing over and over again, till therefore the mindset of our young people isn't about we and overcoming and us as a people, but it's about me, myself, and I.
You know, you hit it on the head, because the difference is today is that we have to understand, and when we look at the people of old, young, look at in every industry. If you notice those that achieve much, they were all about a message of hope, a message of victory, a message of overcoming. You know, let's go back. Let's look at, because we're talking about even going back, look at people like the Jacksons, the Jackson 5. They were a young group, teenage, but look at, they took the nation by storm. But notice the songs that they sung. There was nothing about those songs that was derogatory. It was nothing about those songs. I mean, they were happy songs. You know, they were songs that had encouragement, songs that talked about love or talked about just the infatuation of it. Now, you got the Stevie Wonders back in that era, always young. The Marvin Gayes were young. All of these singers were young people.
All of them were young.
They were very young inside of it. Now, let's fast forward. Let's fast forward today, and we have a whole generation that has been brought up on derogatory lyrics that are filled with nothing but sexual, explicit type of language, and now with the advent of videos and stuff like that, literally, we just have soft porn that is basically legalized. We got soft porn, and that's what we see. And so our young people are entertained by that today. Our young people are brought into that today. You know, when I'm hearing 11-year-old and 9-year-old kids that are repeating songs, and Beyonce is one of her last albums, and they're talking about the fact, swerving on it and surfboard. I mean, 11-year-old, 9-year-old, you know, talking about grinding and all these things there. Are you kidding me? And so it's a whole different mentality. It's not one that empowers us in personal responsibility. We don't see that. So as you said, we have generation after generation back to back that are dependent on a system. No one has the mindset that I'm going to make it. I'm going to be the first this, or I'm going to find the cure for that, or I'm going to expand my boundaries. And you think about what has occupied our time. At one time, coming out of the 90s, out of the 80s, you know what the whole thing was? We was talking about the plight of single-parent homes. And, wow, single-parent homes, that's such a bad thing. But the reality is that it's not the single-parent home so much that we got to be afraid of. It's the other parent home. And that other parent is the babysitter. It's the media. It is the games. It is the computer. It is all of those things that entertain our children's mind, bombarded with images, bombarded with games that only promotes violence, bombarded with these type of things, and they become desensitized. Where is the rally? Where is that desire to be that difference maker? Think about it. Everyone that you look back at, Stokely Carmichael, when you look back at these were young people who stood up for rights and justice. They stood up. And we have missed that today. We're entertainment age, a media-driven age. It's all about us. It's about the platinums that we have sold, but it's not about the lives that we have changed effectively.
So basically a lot of what we're doing and how we've caused things to shift is the fact that we have legalized the pornolistic mind-setting activities of our flesh.
Absolutely.
So that's why the pressure of if you don't look a certain way, if you don't walk a certain way, if you're not shaped a certain way, that, you know, that those are called the have and have not, you know, and it causes low self-esteem, and therefore you have more prostitution. You have boys thinking that they're never going to be anything because of the color of their skin. I was talking to someone, I can't remember who it was today, about the movie. Oh, Andy Henrique is a motivational speaker here in Fort Lauderdale. And we were talking about the television program where they had with the young girls with the dolls, and that the doll was, they asked which doll was prettier, and they picked the white doll because the white doll had better hair, her skin was better, and told her the black doll was ugly, and said, you know, they didn't like that one. So, you know, we have actually, even in our homes, because, you know, parents verbally abuse the children so that their self-esteem plunges it too by telling them, oh, stop eating that because you're going to be fat like so-and-so. You're going to be big as a whale. Oh, let me do something with your hair because your hair is too nappy. Oh, your lips are too big. Your butt's too big. We put all this pressure on them by saying, okay, so they're already getting this out in the world, out in the street, and then they got to get in and home with people that are supposed to love, protect them.
You hit it right on the head because of the fact, see, that goes back to that mentality once again. You know, we cannot show a man how to, we cannot teach a man how to swim by showing him another man drowning. We can't. We have to be that example. You know, if I want my children to do better, to improve, I don't tell them how stupid they are. You don't say, well, boy, you're so stupid, you're so dumb, I don't know what's wrong with you. Man, you just like your crazy mama or whatever. No, you can't do that because you got to push them toward what you would desire them to be or what you really believe is in them. I believe that expectations is the fuel that drives dreams. You got to have expectation. So when I want to correct my sons, and when I'm upset with them, I say, look, this is unacceptable. I expect more than this out of you. I expect better than this. You're capable of doing better than this. This is definitely not your best. Not one word there puts them down, but it talks to the fact that I expect more out of them. They are better than this. I know that you can give more inside of it. That's important. But for the parent who constantly, and sometimes parents unconsciously even compare their children. Yeah, and they unconsciously, they even compare their children, sometimes treating the darker one different than they treat the lighter one, oftentimes saying things that are derogatory towards them, like you said, even with the hair, you know, you'll sit your nappy head down, you know, as if, you know, you have basically, you're picking them off little by little. You're pecking on their self-esteem, their sense of worth, and their self-worth. You know, what happened to saying to them, listen, I know you can do that. We are taught in a Jewish culture, and if you can test it yourself. You run into a Jewish man or woman that may be pushing their baby in a stroller that you introduce. When they introduce you, they say hello, and they'll tell you, "This is Andy. This is my lawyer. This is Andrew. This is my doctor." They begin to speak over those children's lives immediately.
Life.
They begin to speak life to them inside of that, and so the sense of value, and that's what I'm talking about tonight. It's about value, and that's a challenge. You know, we've had the ice water challenge. We've had all kind of challenges out there. But what about having the value challenge? And the value challenge is about what? It is about challenging each other to value ourselves, to value one another. Whew, I dare you to value, outvalue me, that when I see you, that I value who you are as a woman, as an individual. When I think of you, Dr. Val, I look at a woman that I'm proud of. I look at a woman who can say something to me because she's not only overcome obstacles, but I value her because she didn't quit. I value her because of the fact she continues to pour out into the world. I value her because of the fact she brings substance to it. That is the value that we must walk in and expect out of each other. And when that changes, the whole scope of who we are changes. And that's what happens. When you run into somebody, I ran into a guy tonight on my way in the grocery store. We kept running to each other on the same aisle. I was blocking him. And about the third time, we looked at each other. We started laughing and said, look, man, we got to stop me like this, right? After you this time. But it was good to have that exchange with a man of color. And then it didn't get to the point, you know, they didn't get to the point where I said, well, you know, what we say, hey, what's up with you, man? Okay, you need to get out of the way. It wasn't that. Was a sense of that I valued and respect who he was and everything, and we had that type of dialogue. I just left 14 men and a whole audience of other people that I felt great because of the fact these men were empowered. These men had a sense of respect and value. And we looked at each other and said, you know what? We are the seed. We have to be the seed. And that's what I'm saying. The value challenge is about everybody being that seed. That seed of value, that reflection of value. Because when we begin to show that, we begin to erase some of the negative things that have been said about us as people of color. And that's a word that has to resound. We have to value one another, and they need to know that we're valuable. But we can't let the white people off neither. When I say that, I mean this. Well-meaning white people that say they're Christians and well-meaning, where is their voice right about now? They should be the ones also standing up and saying, this is not right. This is not justice. This has got to stop. Because I believe in the words of Dr. King that ultimately, that if you're not part of the solution, then that means that you're part of the problem.
Part of the problem.
So we got to we can't be bystanders. We got to be upstanders, and that's the message to our silent brothers over there, our silent white brothers and sisters who want to say, "But I love everybody." No, that's not a prejudice bone in my body, but you don't have the right bone in your body to make you speak up and speak out. Where are you on this line? Where are you in standing up and speaking out against this? Because if you honestly believe that what we're seeing is wrong, then you speak up and you speak out. The same thing, Dr. Val, that goes to so many, whether domestic violence, whatever. Pastors have got to stand up and speak up. They're talking about, well, you know, you don't believe in a man hitting a woman, or you don't believe in this abuse, but you never open your mouth. You never say nothing. You never hold anybody accountable for it. So if you're not part of the solution, then you're definitely part of the problem.
Yeah, and then for so long, we allow ourselves and for people to tell us about our limitations more than our possibilities. And when we can't see any possibilities or way out, then we succumb to the other, which is crime, which is domestic violence, which we cry out and speak out about all the time because it is so prevalent, and it's going to escalate. The holidays are coming. There's no money. People are being laid off from work, holiday season, and people are being laid off from work. So domestic violence is going to escalate, but, you know, we have to put some things in place so that they can embrace a larger vision of themselves, so they can hope against hope. You know, Jay, well, I've often said on the show that growing up I had no idea that we were poor because we ate good, we had clean clothes, and we had a nice warm bed to sleep in. What they consider poor is not what we considered poor. Because we had the main ingredient, we had love.
Absolutely. And that was the and that's the thing. You know, that's an old message that I know I've preached for years, and probably every preacher preached some version of it. And it says that we got what we wanted, but we lost what we had.
Ooh, and I love that.
You know, and so much because of the fact we looked over and we saw what we thought the grass was green on the other side. And I believe that somewhere along the line the message got twisted, because I don't think that people such as Dr. King and those before him and after, they wasn't advocating that, listen, that we be just as white people. They just was advocating that we have equity and that we have equality and that you don't deliberately second class us and put us in a box as a second-class citizen, but afford us the opportunities to do the right thing. And somewhere along the line, you know what happened inside of that? We lost so much. Because you know what? When there were black-owned neighborhood stores, when the stores in the community was owned by Mr. and Mrs. Smith or whoever, inside of that, we knew those individuals. They looked like us. They knew our parents. Mm-hmm. They knew things. Now all of that is gone. We go to our convenience store, and we have people that are not even from this country that are on every corner, and we know for the most part, only thing we are is a consumer to them. They don't invest back in our communities. They don't do any of those things there, but we allow it to happen. And so what did we lose out on? You just mentioned that bond of love. I'm from a large family, and, man, it was that love that we had for one another that made us special. And you think about it, so many people today, and this is a major part here, and I think this is a major key. When we have been successful, too often we don't do anything to continue that legacy.
Right.
You know, the late Dr. Miles Monroe said something that I thought was so profound. He said it all the time. He said to the fact that there is no success without a successor. Mm-hmm. And I believe that with all my heart. How can one deem that they're successful if they have not prepared a successor or at least mentored or poured into somebody else's life to show them how to do it, to give them the self-help, the demonstration or reflection, the demonstrable example of how to achieve. And I think that's what we've lost even across even our success as fluent African Americans. Too often we think that our statement or our claim to fame is to ride through the neighborhood and let folks see what we're driving or to brag about what we have. That is not leaving a legacy. If anything, it may garner envy. But I'm saying when we leave a legacy, what is it that I can do? I can invest in the lives of others. I've got to invest in the lives of these children. And I understand the church is on the thing with the dancing, and that's great. The church is on the thing with so many things. But how many times we have things and programs that not only take our children through understanding their history, but really talking to them about value and their worth and what they're able to do. And inside of you is the next great chemist of physics. You know, most of us don't understand that it's a black man who really is the inventor of a cell phone. Well, guess what? No one is talking about it. We don't parade those things. We don't talk about those things. So no wonder Henry don't think that he can succeed to be anything else. No wonder the street corner seems like his first and only option, because he has not been given the tools to understand that he can become anything that he wants if he's willing to be disciplined, to learn, to be focused, and make the transition that he needs to in life. And that's what it goes all back to. We've got to set right goals, right aspiration. We've got to get it. We ought to have a mentor in our lives that is able to walk us through this. We ought to be able to study the habits of people that have been successful. We ought to be able to look at that and say, wow, I believe I can do that. Or show me how to do that. How did you do that? Or what made you do that? So what was your thought pattern when this happened? That's what the conversation needs to be amongst too many of our young people. We don't have a dialogue. It's too easy to send them to their room, too easy to let them play on their iPads, too easy to let them be sentenced to the computer. It's too easy to dispose of them, to get them out of our hair. And before long, but their whole lives have escaped us because we was too busy sending them to their room, giving them the autonomy of the iPad and all those things, but we didn't give them the love. Because I believe, honestly, that children spell love T-I-M-E.
Yeah. Absolutely. You know, when you said the late Dr. Miles Monroe, I just seemed like I got stopped breathing because was a couple of weeks ago that he and eight others lost their lives into a plane crash. And it was he who said one of the richest places in the world is the graveyard because there are lives that did not live up to their full potential. They died with so much in them. And he dedicated his life into empowering men, women, children. He was truly the message that he bring, and he is going to be honored and memorialized throughout for months to come. But officially, they're celebrating his life on this coming Thursday, the 4th of December. And then here again at the Faith Center in Fort Lauderdale on the 11th. Of December, be celebrating and honoring the life and legacy of Dr. Miles Monroe, who has truly been a mouthpiece of change and who has actually thrusted so many people to tap into their purpose to be who they are. People have written books and, you know, become successful individuals because of his voice crying in the wilderness, if you will. So we do want to honor and salute him, his life, his legacy, his wife, and all those, Dr. Pender, who lost their lives on that plane that day.
You know, but the beautiful thing inside of what you're saying, and it goes along with what I just said, is this, is that Dr. Miles, he's only absent from this physical world because his legacy lives on. It lives on in you. It lives on in me. It lives on to many that followed him via his ministry, whether by CD, books, tapes, whatever. For those that had the opportunity to have him as a professor at ORU or whatever it might be, his legacy lives on because he poured out of himself and he poured into others. And that is the place we have to get. See, it was no problem in gaining. But see, obtaining is not enough. It is when we give back and multiply that we truly leave a legacy. And that's what we want to do. When it's all said and done, our mark has got to be left on this earth. And that's why it's important that even people might not understand what happened in Ferguson is really a summons to each and every one of us. We have to break the cycle of negative derogatory thinking, and this and we have to break this whole stereotypical image of seeing young men of color as being savages and beasts. We must break this because the next generation is owed a better life. They're owed a better opportunity. They should not have to pay for the idiotic sins of the predecessor. And so what we have to do is establish the fact who we are. We are valuable. We are people of character. We are people of intelligence. We are people of faith. We have weight. We have value. And I believe that is incredibly important because, once again, you know, it's like the example, I think it was Dr. Miles who may have said this as well. He talked about the fact of a person. You know, if there's a $100 bill there, and a person took the $100 bill, if they balled it up, if they put dirt on it, if they crumble it, it still has the same value of being $100.
The same value.
And so what our message to our young folks is today is that no matter what you go through, no matter what life has done, because some of them are born into the world with stripes against them, not because of what they've done. You got kids that are born with emotional developmental delays, children that are born addicted to drugs because of what their parents did, kids that were born to folks that rejected them. But they've got to understand they're more than what happened to them. They still have value, and they have worth. And that's the message that we've got to get out. And that message will have to supersede and permeate the lives of people so that they don't turn to the drugs and turn to those things there in order to self-medicate their issues. And that's what we have to do. We owe it to ourselves as a people, as believers. Man, when it's all said and done, it won't matter how big our churches were.
Mm.
It won't matter how many members that we had. It won't matter how pristine the glass and the building was in any way. The real measure will be, did we build people? Did we create successors? Did we give substance in their lives? Because all the other things are just symbols. Your car is nothing but a symbol. It's symbols of what we call success. But the real success is in the substance. It is that which is able to be reproduced. It is that which I'm able to pour into my sons, my daughter, little Ricky down the street, the folks around the corner. That is when we know that we're making difference. And guess what, Dr. Val, we don't need a title to do that. We don't need a title to do that. We have too many people with titles, not enough people functioning.
You're absolutely right. This show is like getting away from us. I have some individuals holding. We'll see, get some questions and comments for
sure.
People are holding. Let's have folks chime in with their opinion. In Maryland, 2224, you're live on the air. You have a question or comment regarding our topic, getting fit for 2015.
Getting fit for 2015. I was wondering what the topic was because there were so many topics introduced. This is Dr. Dunglin. Hi, Dr. Clark.
Hey, Dr. D.
How are you?
I'm
great.
Doing wonderful. Good to hear you guys online. And I'm talking into the program, and so many topics came up. I said, now, what is the real topic here? I said,
yes.
Get in there. Okay, and you say it's getting ready for 2015, and
because you know we have all these different things that have gone on, and so much has happened in the last 30 days, and so I said, well, we're going to just talk about it all as much as we can,
and I hear you are, and I'd like to join in to say that it takes me back to generations. And we're talking about the changes in generations, and Pastor Bickle will tell you that I'm very much concerned about that, and because of the intergenerational changes that our young people go through, and what is happening today. I must say I've lived several generations. I hope I can live one more, but I can tell you it's been going on for years. It's the same things that are going on. And as you mentioned earlier, what's different now is that it's become legalized. It wasn't legalized before. It was something that children heard from listening from behind the door when they shouldn't have been listening to what was going on in the front room with their parents and their parents' friends. And talking about the different music and the lyrics of the music, they're there. You go all the way back to Bobby Blue Bland and some of the others, they're there, and they're not coming just from the Black Cultural Society, but they started from the other societies. They're in other languages as well. And it's just that it's now more popularized because it's legalized. And our next generation, my concern is we've legalized everything. As you know, the elections,
everything
indicated marijuana, you know, and so forth. Because some of my grand said, well, Nana, I know you're not going to vote on that. And I said, well, let me explain to you what this is all about, because this is nothing new. Marijuana has already been legalized as a prescription drug. I said, but what my concern is that they're adding to it is that the caretakers can now get the prescription drug so they say, for their client. I said, that's my concern. So, no, I'm not going to vote for that. It's already where it should be for the care of people for medicinal purposes. That's where it should be. That's where it is. Any more legalization to it, you can go to the candy store in the corner and get it, you know. So, no. And so the next step, when you talk about what's legal and what's not, pornography. That's another issue that we need to be really concerned with, because it is legal. It is in other countries. Okay, so we're, as the United States, we've adapted many of what comes from other countries, and one of them is prostitution, legalizing prostitution.
Child pornography.
Child pornography, all of that legal. And I couldn't understand in the other countries when the social media, the social networks like MySpace, one of the first popular ones among all of our cultures, when they were using that, perpetrators were bringing, and perverts were bringing our young men and women online with them and actually going and setting up dates to meet with them. Okay, that was already happening in other countries. And so the other countries that were doing this, they wonder, well, why is the United States, why is America getting so hopped on this? We do it already. You know, we're already with 10-year-olds and 12-year-olds, I mean 50- and 60-year-old men. So what is America getting excited about? Now we're just coming over there and get some of what they have. That's what it is. I am very much against social networks for many reasons. I know that's how I studied once for the United States Marines, and that's where the terrorists were recruiting our own people, foreign terrorists, recruiting our own people through the social networks, and that's still happening. So it's where are we today, getting ready for 2015? We can't get ready for 2015. 2015
right.
is already on us. It's already here. What's going on in Missouri, that's the same things that I saw back in the 50s, okay? The same things that I saw in the 40s. I mean, I'm not dating myself, but I was one of the children that sat on the other side of the door and listened to my parents. And and those things were happening, you know, during the war time. And those things were happening when the coming out of slavery, my grandparents were slaves, coming out of slavery, those things continued. We talk about I heard Pastor Steve mention the Jewish culture. They have their own slavery-type epidemic going on in their lifetime. So it's not just a race situation. It's all cultures. When I talk to my Asian peers, it's all cultures. We're all going through the same thing at the same time. But in some areas, it's become legalized. It's just that here in the United States, there are many that our constitutional legislators and executives are trying to keep from becoming legal. But money, I heard Pastor T mention, our children look at love as P-I-M-E. They look at love as M-O-N-E-Y, you know. That's number one, you know. Nana, I need a new car. Okay, go, you're working, get a new car. But can you help me? It's about, don't you love me? It's about M-O-N-E-Y, okay? And that happened not because they started it at that age. They knew it from before. There was no television years ago. There was no television. A lot of that is on TV. There are stations on TV that I say, not in my house. I don't care if it is a cartoon show. You cannot watch it in my house. I don't like the type of words and language that they're using. No. They even say, some of the children say, don't go to her house because she doesn't like to give candy to children. I said, that's right. You can get some juice. You can get some cookies. I'm not going to give you some candy. I'm not going to help pay the dentist. Have your parents, they have to give their money to the dentist. Now, that's my personal belief. Are we getting ready for 2015? I was talking to one of our great community leaders today, and we were talking about education and training and how we educate and train our young people. and the values of life. That's where I see getting ready for bringing, giving them, understanding them the values of life. And most important, when they understand the value of life, the value of living, the value of moving to the next step, then they're ready to adapt. You know, we can, I remember a long time ago, I was like 11 years old, and I was babysitting. Just, I was like a play date for this little 3 or 4 year old. And I said, don't do that or stop this. And her mother said to me, when you say that, say why. You know, explain. So you say, don't do that. Don't do that because you can hurt your finger and it will bleed. So you're giving them the whole line. And right then and there, I knew I wanted to be a psychologist. I want to understand people. I want to understand life. And I want to be able to teach it and deliver it to others. And at that point, it's true. When I'm even in doing counseling sessions with others, and I said, well, why are you doing that the way you're doing it? If it's disturbing you, let's talk about how you can make a change. And you know how that is, Dr. Parker. And mm-hmm. that's where we get with our young people. Well, if someone is saying to you that you have nappy hair and you don't like it, let's talk about why you don't like it. Because your hair is nappy. I mean, it is. It is what it is. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, they were in the 60s, it was something wrong with it, you know, so they used to say it's kinky or it's natural, okay? It was nappy in the 50s and the 40s, okay? And if you say the word nappy now, there's some people who proudly stand up and put their shoulders up and say, yeah, my hair is nappy because it's mine and it's different and it belongs to mm-hmm. my culture and it's a part of my race. And it makes me stand out to show distinction and extinction and glamour. And that's what we want to say to them. That's who you are. Embrace who you are. Getting ready for 2015, embrace who you are. Become educated. Become more aware of yourself, your personal values. Bring morals into play, good morals. Because it's up to you to make the decision on where we go forward. So if you're in the age now, coming 2015, in 2025, where will you be? Set goals. Develop mission statements. Mission statements for your personal life. So now you have a goal that in the next 6 months, this is what I'll have. This is where I'll be. In the next year, this is where I'll be. And then by 5 and 10 years, I know I have the platform, okay? And that's what we want to teach our people, not just young people, but teaching adults. I'm very big on teaching adults because adults bring the issue and the problem to the young people. The young people, unless they have some sort of biological, mental degradation, then that's one thing. But having a mental degradation because it's coming from the adult that they live with, that they associate with, the teachers need care. The teachers need counseling. You know, working in the psychiatric institutions, each of the psychiatrists, the psychologists, the social workers, the caretakers, we have what we call grand rounds, group meetings, because we need to have that awareness of ourselves and to keep it going so that we can help deliver messages and care for others. And I guess I'm talking too much, but I can understand what's happening.
One of the things I want to say, Dr. Douglas, is, you know, the information you gave you and the fact that you gave solutions to things that they need to do or we need to help implement in place in order to cause that shift in our lives to take us to the next level. So I do thank you so much for chiming in and giving that information. And hopefully you'll tune in again, because that's what Hot Topics from the Soul is about, giving it a lifeline so people can talk about how they feel and offer hope to other individuals that are listening in. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, absolutely. I heard that generational responsibility that we have, and I think that's what has to be established in our society today. I am my brother's keeper. I am responsible for my legacy, and I need to be able to do so. Legacy is more than notoriety. It is responsibility to pour into the next generation.
Jay, you know, like I said at the beginning, you know, J.R. Thicklin, you're on Facebook. You have a nonprofit. Talk about the nonprofit and what's your next move.
Well, Destiny by Choice. You know, we are a faith-based nonprofit, and we address the issues of domestic violence and, you know, and apply to fatherlessness. And our next move is to really, in 2015, to really be viable. We want to be sustainable. We want to be viable. We want to be progressive. We want to have an all-inclusive type of a service that reaches specifically in the underserved population of color, because so often the antennas inside of social ills, you know, doesn't reach far enough in our communities.
And how can they find out information about your website, how to connect with you?
They can go to www.destinybychoice.org. They can go to www.destinybychoice.org. You can also find me on Facebook under J.R. Thicklin, or Domestic Violence, It Is Your Business.
And your radio show?
Well, every Monday night they can find us on the Soul of America Radio, 9 o'clock Eastern Time, with Hope and Healing, A Journey to Wholeness. And they can tune in by going to www.soulofamericaradio.com and simply going to Hope and Healing.
Thank you so much. You know, it is always a pleasure. When I first started doing radio, and doing my conference calls almost 5 years ago, you were there every week cheering me on, helping me out. Babe. So this is like old times doing the show now that this is road radio with a national and international platform. It's always good for you to come out and rock with me again.
It was always a pleasure because, as I said before, you're my shero, and so much of what I've done has been inspired by you. When you were doing that years ago, started out, it was great then, and you've mastered it now, and as a result, you've had some children because there are a few other of us that are now doing shows as a result of what you actually paved the way for.
Well, I thank you so much for that, and again, I thank you for joining in with me for another Hot Topics from the Soul. And also visit my website, www.fromthesoulofawoman.com. And it's holiday season. Nonprofit organizations like my own, From the Soul of a Woman Foundation, and Destiny by Choice with Dr. J.R. Thicklin, and Against All Odds with Shirley Carter, we're all grassroots organizations, nonprofits. A lot of times, you know, I know you want to give to United Way or what's the other one, Jay?
Well, you got United Way, the American, you know, Long Association,
Red Cross.
Red Cross, all those major, and they're good. But a lot of times a small grassroots organization really could use the support.
Yeah, because we do a lot of the work that they don't do, you know. We don't have an overhead of administrative fees where that goes first before it actually gets to the people. So, you know, those of you that have a hard time just sewing, just donating to a nonprofit organization, I've published 4 books. You can go online from thesoulofawoman.com and purchase one or all of my books. Jay has a CD, Domestic Violence in a Silent Church. You can go purchase that on his website. So support local nonprofit organizations, and certainly if you enjoy what we're saying and approve of what we're doing, support it. I thank you so much for tuning in to another Hot Topics from the Soul. And remember that our deepest fear is not that we're inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we're more powerful beyond measure. Go out, fight for your dreams, and live a life of purpose. Good night.
Good night.